Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey, Negotiations Ninja listeners, you've got Mark here from the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Thank you for joining me. Today, we've got Tim Cronin on the show. He is the Chief Procurement Officer of Florida Blue, which is the large healthcare company based out of Florida. Fantastic conversation that we had about negotiating internally with your employees on how to get better performance. And Florida Blue has a very unique and progressive way of evaluating employee performance and encouraging better employee performance. I really, really enjoyed this discussion, mainly because I think a lot of people don't view the conversations that, number one, they have with their managers, or number two, that they have with their employees as negotiations, but in fact, they are negotiations. And throughout this discussion with Tim, we talked about empathy, we talked about radical candor, and we talked about all the steps that you need to take to have better conversations with your employees. So for leaders, I think this is going to be a really, really good show. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Doing great today. Mark, how are you?
I'm very, very well. Thank you, my friend. I'm so glad that you were able to join me on the show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited because this is a topic I've been wanting to talk about for quite some time. And I'm glad that I have you on the line to talk about it. And for the listeners, you already heard the intro. We're going to be talking about how to get better performance out of your employees and how that ties back to communication and negotiation. But before we get into that topic, Tim, maybe you could give the listeners a bit of background as to who you are and how you got to this point.
Perfect. My name is Tim Cronin. I'm currently the Chief Procurement Officer for Florida Blue, which is the Blue Cross Blue Shield plan in the state of Florida. Our company is an $18 billion company, predominantly serving in the health solutions space, not only in Florida, but across the United States. I've been in supply chain and or procurement for a better part of 30 years, predominantly in either retail, financial services, and most recently for the past 10 years in healthcare. Just a little bit of background on our team, since this is a little bit appropriate for the content. We source about $1 billion worth of goods for the company, have 41 people on the team, a great team that we've put together over the past 4.5 years, and hopefully some of our insight in terms of employee performance will be helpful to you and your listeners going forward.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about. You know, when we speak about employee performance, And part of being a leader in a performance-based team like procurement or sales or any kind of performance-based team requires you to drive for results, not the least of which are, of course, savings, but sometimes we have to drive for other results. Sometimes team members aren't as productive as they should be or maybe as they could be. How do you determine the difference between performers that could be a good fit or versus someone who's just not a good fit?
So let me kind of step back a little bit and talk a little bit about our performance system that we use at Florida Blue. The first thing that we try to do is we try to be very direct and cognizant of the linkage of our goals within procurement and our goals within the finance department, which we report into, and the overall enterprise. And our hopes with that is that everybody in our team can find a purpose in some of the metrics and some of the competencies that we look for in procurement and see how that ties back to the overall performance of the company. So we try to bring back that linkage to be able to look at what performance really is And although we do look at individual goals and we do look at individual competencies, we want to see how that drives overall business performance. The second thing is that, you know, and this is why it's inappropriate for your podcast, Mark, is that when you think about it, every interaction that we have, be it with a supplier or even with our employees, that at some point boils down to some form or function of a negotiation. Mm-hmm. And the key thing that we want to press upon everybody on our leadership team and everybody on our team is kind of a phrase that, you know, we've picked up from some people in academia, specifically Kate Vitasic and her work around the vested agreements, is that we are looking for what's in it for we type agreements, even between our employees and ourselves. So negotiating with our employees is not like purchasing commodities and or negotiating commodities. We want to end up with win-win solutions, because we are working in the same small space with everybody and we rely on everybody on the team. So we really kind of focus on, you know, what's in it for we and how do we get both sides to see and act like that. So I think once we have that understanding of that's our overall goal and we can see the linkage between what we do in procurement, finance, and enterprise, we can then kind of shift into meaningful conversations with the employees to understand what performance is, understand where they are on the spectrum on in performance, and understand what their goals are moving forward and what our goals are in moving forward to make sure that we're aligned with that.
Very cool. You know, one of the things that you said kind of caught me, I think it's super interesting. You said, what's in it for we? And then earlier on, you said, we try to tie it back to a purpose for that employee. Could you expand on that? What do you mean by you try to tie it back to a purpose?
Absolutely. It's a great question. You know, we've worked a lot with our HR business partners who have, you know, revamped a little bit of the performance management process in the past couple of years, and we really like it. We used to be a very formal process-oriented company, and everybody had a scorecard, and everybody had very distinct metrics in terms of what defines success for them. And we found a couple of things happen. One was we literally have had people arguing over savings, for example, or arguing over who was more involved in a process improvement versus somebody else. And it really eroded teamwork. So we've moved now more towards informal conversations with our employees. We still have metrics. We can't get out of that. We are procurement after all. But we want to understand what it is that they are looking for, the employees in their future, but also making sure that that's a good fit, which was your original question. So we've looked at really two conversations. Two of them happen throughout the year, are called sync. And that's when we kind of relay to the employees how we expect them to sync up with the overall goals of the organization and procurement. We get their input into those goals. We kind of derive them as a team and what are we going to be working on in the next year. And then the other two conversations that we have are called grow. And these are completely focused about what is it that the employee wants to do. And it's our job as leaders to kind of merge those two together so that we understand how we've synced our goals with the employees and the teammates and also how we can help them grow in their future. Again, looking for what's in it for we, that really kind of gets us to the end state that we're looking for.
Neat. And you said something that I find interesting. They're informal conversations. And when you have these conversations and you're sitting down with the employees, obviously you can't have everyone performing at 100%, 100% of the time. You must have at least a few employees who need a little bit of encouragement. And absolutely. So how do you prepare for having that negotiation with someone to get the better performance out of them?
No question. So there are definitely, even if they are informal and, somewhat less less structured as they had been in the past. That doesn't mean that as a leadership team, we don't prepare for them. So we are preparing for a spectrum of conversations that happen with our employees throughout these four sessions. And really what we're trying to look for is there truly a performance gap, or did the person take a calculated risk and missed on it? And it's one of the things in procurement, there's an old saying, you know, you can never have a perfect contract or a perfect deal, otherwise we would work ourselves out of a job. And we want people to take calculated risks, and I emphasize the word calculated, but we also want people to be able to do that in a way that brings greater value back to the company. And a lot of that revolves around soft skills. So we want to make sure that people are working well with their peers, they're working well with their business partners, whether it's the people that they're pseudo customers within the company or other risk partners that we work with around the table. But we do prepare to give them that feedback. And we work really hard as a leadership team to understand what people are doing, and whether it falls into those two categories of a performance gap and or a calculated risk mistake. We are actually very celebratory about calculated risks, so that people understand that it's okay to do that. We've had several cases where, we looked at a negotiation strategy, we thought it was going to work, and it didn't end up working. Great strategy. We just, things happen. It happens when there's two parties involved in a negotiation and or a deal. That may not be an error in our world, and we want to make sure that's celebrated, and we want to make sure that people are thinking about that and actually stepping outside of their comfort zone to make better deals. But either way, we want to make sure that when we have these conversations, it's back to a two-way street between the manager and or the teammate who's having these conversations. We don't want either side to feel like it's one-sided. We don't want either side to feel like it's heavy-handed. We want them to know what to expect from us, and we also want them to be able to tell us what we should expect from them. So although it is informal, by no means does it mean it's unprepared.
I love that you celebrate calculated risk taking. There's a fantastic book that I just finished reading called Thinking in Bets by a lady named Annie Duke. She was a former World Series of Poker player, and now she talks about decision quality. There's a thing that happens in poker called resulting, where you get a certain result, and let's just say, for example, that result is good, like you win a hand. But the decisions that you made to get to that result may have been bad decisions. Likewise, absolutely, you may have gotten a bad result, but the decisions that you made to get to that result may have been good. And so what she's trying to tell people is, you can't necessarily tie the result to the decisions in poker, because there's a lot that's outside of your control, much like there is in negotiation. You could have really great decision quality, but still end up with a not great result. So the fact that you guys celebrate good decision quality, to me, is very mature.
Yeah, and a lot of it was really trying to build this idea of teamwork and camaraderie, in the sense of, you said it best, not everything is going to work out perfect. And if you go through the right steps and you go through the right process, that doesn't mean that it's deemed a failure. And in some cases, there are times where the soft skills outweigh even the hard skills in that case. So to add kind of a third vector to that comment that you just made, not only do you want to go through the right decision-making process, have a result, but you also, no decisions are made in a vacuum. How you make those decisions and how you go through that process with other people is something that we look very strongly towards, to make sure that, my first boss at Florida Blue said, you're not leaving dead bodies behind, and or you're working well with others to be able to build relationships and be able to build your network so that the next time you have to go through that decision-making process, you can call on people who may have a deeper understanding or have more knowledge, and you can go through that process even better.
Yeah, I totally agree with your guys' methodology. And I think frequency for you obviously makes a lot of sense as well. If you're having those three conversations a year, then the frequency and the consistency of those conversations, I'm assuming, is very, very important, because when you're having a conversation about potentially improving performance, that stuff should never come as a surprise. So when you have that conversation, sometimes it can be very, very difficult, even if it isn't coming as a surprise. So what words do you use to encourage those employees to perform better?
And that's a great point. And I will be honest that we were a little bit nervous when we moved from, at one point, 12 conversations throughout the year. We had, you know, monthly meetings, to be able to move to 4 meetings and make it, you know, a little bit more informal. I will say we were all a little bit nervous about that. And, you know, think about it. Well, do I have to wait 4 months or, you know, 6 months in between 2 sync conversations to be able to kind of provide feedback? And what we found is the fact that it has created even more conversations, because when you were having conversations 12 months or 12 times a year, people waited for that, because a month goes pretty fast in the business world. Now we're having even more infrequent conversations, even outside of this grow and sync process. And we're able to kind of address performance issues and or decision-making issues sooner rather than later. So again, like I said before, none of these are ill-prepared when it comes to having conversations. No one really likes to get bad feedback, and it can be a little bit shocking, and you do have to do it in a way that helps the teammate understand where the disconnect is and what they can do to improve. So we have, you know, a couple of people who are on my team who I really, really admire in terms of the way that they do that. They bring back really our core values into any conversation they'll have with a person about, performance. So it may end up being, you know, not a good conversation, but there's always something positive in it. There's always something that the person has done well. I mean, we don't have anybody who's, you know, just completely not performing in that sense. But they really want to tie back, you know, how if you would have done this differently, it would have come back to this result, and or it would have shown this value that, you know, that we deem important at the company. But again, that preparation into that, and you know, we don't want to kind of sugarcoat it. We want to have that hard conversation if it's needed. But at the same time, you know, remember, after a performance conversation, we still have to, you know, walk out of that room and go back and be teammates. So again, it gets back into, you know, our clear focus on what's in it for we as we have those conversations.
So when you're having those conversations, you're really trying to focus on the collaborative aspect of the teamwork approach to getting better, because you keep coming back to that what's in it for we thing, which I think is fantastic. So when you're having these difficult conversations, is it easier then to have that conversation when you focus on, look, we need you as a part of this team to help the team, versus you are not doing your job?
No, it's actually not, because you, at the same time, you do have to be very descriptive and precise in terms of what the teammate is not performing in.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, those are conversations that are not fun to have, and they're not easy to have. So again, we're trying to be positive, and we're trying to get everybody to think on the same spectrum. But it is our responsibility as leaders to be able to give that person a very precise reason in terms of why we feel their performance is not there, a path to correcting it. And at the same time, kind of understanding why that's going on. A lot of times it may or may not be that teammate's fault, and we don't know the extraneous things that are going on either in, you know, with their business partners in the company or what's going on in the market that made that that decision difficult. But again, if we can kind of weave in some positivity and weave in a good course, I think that helps everybody in terms of how do we get to be better. Again, no one wants to be a poor performer. No one wants to be a B player. Everybody wants to grow, and everybody wants to be able to be a superstar. And I'd love to be able to have 41 superstars on the team and never have to have a performance conversation again. That's our goal.
Yeah, love it. When we have these conversations, and I think it's similar when we have maybe an underperforming supplier or service provider, I'm assuming that the conversation that you're having there is fairly similar in that you want them to want to do better. It's not that you just tell them to do better. You use your positional power and then they do it, but you want them to want to improve. You want them to want to do better for the business. And so when you're trying to get them to want to do something, it's a different kind of a conversation when you're doing that. Is it easier to use the positional influence to say, hey, you have to do this now, and then they do it? Or is it easier to try and convince them to want to do better?
It's a great question. I think in a lot of cases, you're not able to take positional power completely out of a relationship. At some point, we still have an HR hierarchy and we still have a manager-employee relationship, as much as we want to consider everybody to be a teammate within the procurement team. But we have to understand how the employee at that particular time is going to react to positional power and the most important way to either utilize it or not utilize it. So we have to understand how to get our point across in the most respectful and authentic way. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, there are times when you get into one of these reviews or you get into one of these situations and you're not able to talk like buddies. You're not able to talk like, someone who sits next to you and you've just had a long conversation about, the latest basketball or baseball game. But when it comes down to it again, you have to be authentic and you have to be able to utilize the individual relationship that you have with that person. So, we do a lot of training. We do a lot of role playing with our managers to understand that you may think you understand how that person is going to respond to positional power, but you have to be able to read and react it at that particular moment in order to be able to both walk that journey to better performance. And that, quite honestly, is in some cases performance conversations we have to have with the managers of how do they do better at that. Being a manager is an art. It's not always a science, and you've got to be able to read and react to people around you in order to get there. But I think the key to that is if the manager shows integrity and if they show respect to the person, then the idea of positional power is more of a tactic as opposed to a strategy in terms of how do we deal with performance.
Very, very cool. There's something that you said there that I thought was very, very interesting. You spoke about the power of authenticity. And when you're having these conversations, there's a requirement for you to be authentic. What does authenticity mean to you?
So to me personally, to be authentic is, it's specifically around poor performance or things like that. It's not beating around the bush and it's not sugarcoating things. It's having those critical conversations and to be able to be open and transparent with our teammates. And I think authenticity is built over time. And that is in terms of a level of respect that we have amongst our team so that they understand that, you know, when we are having these conversations, it's not because, you know, I had a bad day or they're having a bad day. It really is a conversation that we need to have in order to improve performance going forward. It's not a question of, you know, I guess the old days of stack ranking employees and things like that. I mean, again, I'd love to be able to put everybody into, you know, a high performing, you know, distribution. As a matter of fact, we don't use distributions at Florida Blue for that very reason. But that doesn't mean that we're not critical. And that doesn't mean that if we do come back and say that someone is meeting expectations, which, by the way, is not a bad thing, that we're doing it for the right reasons and we're judging results for the right reasons. And we have, you know, metrics and history that show that it's not just off the cuff and that we're not just, you know, it's not just Tuesday, let's say. So that really is being authentic with our team, having integrity with them, giving respect to them. And we honestly expect the same thing back from the team when they're dealing with us in that same conversation.
I love that. There's a, you know, it sounds a lot like a book I read called Radical Candor by Kim Scott. I think it's got something to do with being a kick-ass boss without losing your humanity, or I think that's the subtitle. But it's all about just being, you know, that authentic, truthful person that can provide candid descriptions of what they viewed in terms of performance. And what you're telling me, what I'm hearing at least, is that you guys implement that kind of practice internally at Florida Blue, which I think is fantastic. One last question before we close off. I know you're a busy guy. You know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, obviously, when you do this. Sometimes you get it wrong. And if you do get it wrong, it's important to know where you get it wrong and how to recover. I'm hoping that you can share a story. Obviously, keep it high level, no confidential information, but maybe you could share a story of a performance discussion that you've had that didn't go well, and what you learned from that interaction and what you think that others could learn from that.
I definitely can. I don't think you have enough time for me to go through all the times I have not. You know, it's kind of stepping back. I was an engineer by training before I got into procurement. So early on in my career, I was, you know, very structured in terms of, you know, a result is a result and there's no, you know, difference in terms of how to get there. But I've always had, and you said it best, you know, that side of humanity where I think, you know, we are all working there together. We spend a lot of time apart from our family, with our teammates, and we want to make it as, you know, as fun of a place to work, as it can be. But you're right. There have been plenty of times where they have not gone wrong. And there have been plenty of times when it hasn't been just one conversation that hasn't gone wrong. It's been a little bit of a, you know, a season, let's call it, of wrong steps. I've done it with people who have, you know, really have been marginal. I've given marginal feedback instead of really trying to be direct and discreet about it. And a lot of cases that it was really just about the path of least resistance and, you know, let's not upset the apple cart and let's not, you know, let's kind of just let things go and see if they're going to work themselves out as opposed to addressing them early on, in the process. Some of it is just, you know, when we were prepping for this, we talked about, you know, is it kind of like, and I don't want to say anything wrong about broccoli, but is it really just like eating broccoli? And I didn't, you know, you didn't want to do that. So you just kind of pushed it off to the side of the plate. And hopefully, you know, the dog will come around and take the broccoli off your plate. Sometimes that happens as well. You know, if you've had a person who said, you know, I want to look for other opportunities, and then performance starts to go down, but you know, they're looking for other opportunities. Are you really, being authentic with them in that time period? And, that's really been the case that, we've looked kind of in the past and said, we can do better about that. And we can kind of maintain that relationship, up until the very end and not worry about run out or anything like that. You know, the process, we want it to be the same. We want everybody to kind of understand where they're going. But at the same token, outcomes can always be different because in a negotiation, there's always two parties. There's tone that is read into it. There's understanding what the person is saying and taking into account different different ideas. And sometimes that doesn't match up, and sometimes you've got to go back and kind of recreate that conversation so you make sure everybody's on the same page. And I think. And I'll say from the one that I have in my mind, that's one that I didn't do was I didn't go back and make sure that we all understood exactly what was being said and that there was nothing left up to interpretation. Because once you leave that room and interpretation takes on, you've kind of lost the process and it's a lot harder to get that back.
Yeah, 100% true. I think so many people try and declassify internal discussions as not negotiations. They think that for whatever reason it's not a negotiation, but it is a negotiation. It maybe is just a different type of negotiation. Maybe you approach it slightly differently, but a lot of the practices and the tools are essentially the same. I mean, we've spoken so much about candor and empathy and the need to ensure that you make sure that the other party, whomever it is you're speaking to, is fully 100% clear on what expectations are and that you understand what their expectations are of you so that there is no room for interpretation. Absolutely. Throughout the entire discussion. And I think, all of those practices are so aligned with negotiation. It's so in sync. And so I really just want to thank you for your time today. I think you've done an excellent job at explaining the need to have candid conversations internally with employees to drive great performance. And I think what you guys are doing is really mature in that you're praising those employees for taking those calculated risks and talking about decision quality at work, which is incredible. If people want to follow you online or find out what you're doing or what your next steps are, how do they do that?
So personally, I am on LinkedIn and I'm on Twitter, although most of my tweets will, revolve around Tennessee football and or cycling. we also, Florida Blue has a very strong online presence. They can follow Florida Blue and we talk not only about how we're trying to improve health in the communities, but a lot of times we have our HR partners, tweet out things or other partners doing the same thing too. So either Florida Blue or myself, my LinkedIn obviously is easy to find, Tim Cronin, and my Twitter is also under the same name, Tim Cronin. So easy enough to find me there. Look forward to if anybody does have any questions or would like to continue the conversation. It's something that we are all very passionate about and love working with our team and love making the team work better. And, we'd love to do that with anybody in the future.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tim. And for the listeners, I will be linking out to Tim's social profile so that you can find that. You can just go to negotiations.ninja to our podcast page, and you will find in the show notes links to his profiles so you don't have to go and search for it. Tim, thanks again for being on the show, man. Great to have you on.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me. It was very fun.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.